Save the Semantics, episode 256. It is April 23rd, 2024. My name is Myra. This is the podcast where I ramble on for a bit about some shit. I feel like it's been a bit since I've really caught up or updated on sort of things in my own life. It's been a very, very, and I'm not complaining myself that what I've been just kind of been spewing about is very NBA centric and basketball centric, which makes sense. It's usually like that during this time of the year. But quick little update on my end, just some things that I wanted to catch up on. I am going to be going to Argentina for the month of May, which I am very excited about. This is a work-related trip. I'm still going to try my best to post and all that. I still want to talk about the playoffs while they're happening. And, you know, maybe I'm not going to be able to catch up on as much games as I can, but I do want to watch as much as possible. But while I am over there, it might be a little more difficult to do that. But that's kind of what's going on in my life. I'm very excited. I also haven't really registered yet. I am not ready, you know. I'm not like quite ready. Like, I haven't really acknowledged that I'm leaving in like a couple weeks. Even less than a couple weeks. I'm not in travel mode yet. It's weird. I'm still kind of in like a weird, kind of like in a headspace of just routine work stuff, and then just kind of my regular ass routine of how I go about things. So yeah, it hasn't really registered for me yet. I'm not fully ready yet. I'll get there for sure. Like, I feel this happens sometimes when it comes to trips. This will be the most extensive period that I've been out of the country. So that's gonna take some getting adjusted, you know, take some time to get adjusted to. But I'm looking forward to it. I feel it's gonna be quite the experience. I'm part of me when it comes to these kinds of things where it's like these like larger events, if you want to call it, where it's something where I'm clearly stepping out of my comfort zone. There's this sort of sense that it's easier to just opt out. Just be like, you know what? I'm not ready for that yet. Because it is like a large venture in a lot of ways. I do have to, you know, take some moments of like being uncomfortable or whatever. I also haven't traveled overseas in a couple of years now since my last trip. So, it's gonna have to be, you know, just getting used to just the flight and stuff, whatever, time differences. That's pretty, you know, that's minor. But just, you know, the language, the cultural differences, making sure that I'm, you know, being respectful and all that stuff. Like, those are things that I have to sort of be ready for. And I'm, like, I'm not quite in the headspace yet where I've, like, fully gotten on board necessarily. I'm very much looking forward to it, but I'm also not, like I said, I'm just not 100% prepared. Because it's something, it's I like to give myself a lot of time to ready myself for things. Maybe sometimes it's to a detriment where I have things maybe meticulously planned out, and this is one of those instances where it is not the case at all. I feel that I'm gonna be doing some things on the fly for sure, because I haven't done maybe as much research or whatever as maybe I would, you know. I'm going to try to put in the time to do, you know, some research to in terms of places that I want to check out and stuff. But I also don't want to give myself too much of an itinerary, because I just haven't, you know, put my mind to it yet. So I'll build up to it for sure. There's probably no wrong way to travel necessarily, right? But I just, usually I'm someone that kind of plans ahead, but I just, with how work has been, I haven't had the time necessarily to do that. And now that I'm sort of out of my busy period, now that I'm kind of in this period, it's like, it's hard to adjust. So, I'm just going to go into it the best that I can. I know that I don't think I'm going to be necessarily underprepared, but I'm not going to be overprepared. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be, you know, just speaking the language, like, you know, just killing it off the bat. No, definitely not. But, I think that I'll adjust. I think I'll be all right. There's going to be a lot of time spent. I'll have time to essentially you know, adapt. So I think I'll be all right. But I'm trying to, like, get myself into the headspace that I'm going to be expecting kind of a bit of a drastic change from my routine, for at least, like, you know, this period of time, which might not even feel, when it comes to the end of it, I'm sure that I'll probably feel that it was not very long at all. You know what I mean? So I want to enjoy as much as I can. So that's kind of a quick update, sort of a big one, but, I'll still try to record stuff and talk about, you know, I'll talk about how things are going while I'm over there. That should make for some fun topics of discussion. And of course I'll catch up more on the playoffs while they're still going on. Other news, I mean, not, that's really the main big thing. I don't think I'm going to be bought in Kaidos in 2 weeks. It felt like a lofty goal when I said it. It's just not going to happen. It's hard because playoffs started. I'm also preparing for my trip. Sure, maybe I could set aside a little bit of time to play, but I'm not in the right headspace to, you know, engage with a, you know, it's not quite a 100-hour JRPG, but, you know, it's a JRPG. So I just don't think I'm not giving it the respect it deserves. And so I'll most likely come back to it when I come back from my trip later in the summer. And then also on top of that too, my right Joy-Con has pretty much become defunct, unfortunately. Once again, one of my Joy-Cons have kind of gone to shit. It is the worst thing about owning a Switch is the Joy-Con durability. It is awful. It is terrible. I think I'm like on my third one for the right Joy-Con. I've gone through the process of fixing it, usually relating to Joy-Con drift, and I was able to fix this current one a while back, and it ran for a little while. I think it ran for maybe a couple of years. But I think when I fixed the Joy-Con and then when I was putting it back to the pieces together, I think I sent there's sort of like a gap that I accidentally created between the shell of the Joy-Con and some of the, you know, buttons and stuff. So some buttons don't work very well, especially the right stick or right bumper button doesn't work very well sometimes. Like, it is not reliable. So I've had to, when I'm playing certain games, I've had to change the button mapping so that I don't use the R button, but maybe switch it to like the right trigger instead. So it's I've managed to make it work. I've sort of bypassed a lot of these things, but I it's officially not really working anymore. Where it's not docking to when I play handhold, which is usually the format that I play in, it doesn't dock properly. It just doesn't, or when it does dock, it doesn't register when I'm clicking the buttons. So I'm just like, screw it. I'm just gonna buy a new one. It's been a little while anyway. It's not. It is my biggest criticism of this product. It's really unfortunate that they create kind of low quality controllers and that are very easily breakable, and that do not last long. It is a constant issue, and if you know when Nintendo does eventually reveal the Switch 2 or the you know the pred or the su successor, I hope that this is one of the things that they improve on. But I don't really, I'm not putting my eggs in that basket because I don't know if I anticipate that being a significant change. It would be really disappointing if the quality of the controllers were the same standard as this original Switch console, because it's really frustrating, it's really annoying, it's also expensive to buy individual Joy-Cons. I could buy the alternatives to it, but I don't really want to. I don't I I'd prefer to buy just the Nintendo product to use that, because I just don't, I've never used, you know, these alternatives. I don't know how they're gonna feel, if they're reliable, if they dock properly, then I have to go through that hassle, you know what I mean? It's just really not a great system overall. But it is what it is, and you know, I just, you just gotta work around it somehow. Either fixing it yourself or just, you know, in this case, buying a whole new controller, which is again annoying and frustrating, but you gotta do what you gotta do. So yeah, that's also kind of put my Switch on ice basically, and I haven't really been able to play it recently. That's quick catch up on non-NBA playoff news. Yeah, let's get into it. Why not? Yesterday's slate of games were incredible. The back-to-back last night with the Sixers and the Knicks, and the Nuggets and the Lakers. Some of the best games that I've seen in a long time. Both games ended in just insane fashion. It was with the Knicks Sixers, that game was, you know, kind of close throughout the game. Embiid and Maxey were just going off. They both had like 30 plus points. And at the very end of the game, it felt, with like 40 seconds or so left to go, it felt like the Sixers were going to take game two. And I was kind of in the mindset like, okay, all right, we got a series now. They're going to go back to Philly. It's going to be a sort of a hostile environment for the Knicks. But then some crazy shit went down toward the end of the game, where the Brunson hits a three, which just barely drops in, and then you got this sequence where Maxey loses the ball, it gets sprayed out onto DiVincenzo, misses a three, Hartenstein gets a rebound, Ananobi, DiVincenzo shoots another three, hits it, puts the Knicks up by one. Insane sequence. Crazy. I don't even want to get into the whole refereeing nonsense. I don't want to get into it. I don't even really want to talk about it. They came out with like the last 2 minute report today about how there were some missed calls or whatever. I just am like, why even put that out there? It's not good for the NBA, and there's just nothing that can be really done about it. And then I was rewatching the sequence. Main thing, I was just trying to see if Nurse had called the timeout before, you know, Maxey lost it, or if he was calling a timeout before, or like, you know, before Lowry inbounded the ball. And both times it was too close to, you know, make a definitive decision. So I don't know. And then there was physicality and everything, but I just, we wouldn't have had that sequence at all. It wouldn't have been such a crazy sequence if there wasn't some level of physicality. But I just didn't feel that, I don't know. It's let him play, man. Let him play. It's the end of the game. Let him play. I get it. I know it's frustrating. It sucks. My team has been on the other side of that, where we've blown a lead. Takes me back to like the Utah game from last year. Was it last year or 2 years ago? I don't remember. Where it was like everybody was injured. It was like Curry was out, and you know, the players rallied together. And they put like together a really impressive performance. And we're like, oh yeah, we got this. And then it was just like a fast break, game-winning bucket by the Jazz. That was just soul-crushing, right? Obviously, the stakes are much higher in this case. But you could argue it's just there's, I don't know. When there's defensive efforts made, there's going to be contact. And it's subjective. I'm not going to get into it. I thought it was an incredible sequence. I thought it was just wild. The Sixers ultimately choked. You know, there were just errant decisions made from the coach, you know, Nurse, the players. They just could not capitalize. They had chances to put them back up, and it just didn't happen. There were opportunities. They just blew it, really. That's just what it came down to, you know? And just the resilience from the Knicks side of things, the fact that they were able to conjure up, you know, 6 points in less than, like, 10 seconds or whatever it was, and then the two free throws at the end to cap it off, I thought was really something because the game was completely out of their hands. It was, yeah, again, I was of the mindset when I was watching that the Sixers were like, they were good to go. And I was like, all right, on to the next one. I was almost like in the mindset of, you know, I was thinking of what Knicks fans were feeling and then what Sixers fans were feeling. And when that whole sequence happened, I was like, I don't, you know, this is crazy. I don't really... Look, when Brunson hit that first three, I was like, okay, you know, that happens. You got threes in bunches. But then when they turned it over, I was like, I feel like I was like not accepting it. I was just like, I was in disbelief. It was crazy. I was like, there's no way. And then the Hartenstein block on Maxey, I was like, dude, I couldn't even really get like, I was just like, dude, I can't believe I'm watching this. Like, I was, like, in shock. You know what I mean? I was like, dude, what? That's crazy. It wasn't even the next game I'm going to talk about after this. That got me, like, hyped up. That got me out of my, you know, out of my seat. But this one, I was just kind of just, like, I was baffled by how it ended, because it was so abrupt. It was just such a, it was such thievery, you know? One of the craziest games that I've seen in a long time, right? A lot of, I've seen kind of, comments about Knicks fans talking about how they essentially did a reverse Reggie Miller, right? Where Reggie scored, what was it, like 8 points in under a minute by himself to against the Knicks back in the day. That famous series. Yeah, I thought that was a very funny point. So, congrats to the Knicks. I still think that this is going to be a series moving forward. Embiid is obviously hurt and playing through hurt, but I have a feeling they're going to win Game 3. I think that home crowd is going to go crazy, especially considering the results of yesterday's game. I think they're going to bring it. I really do. They've had chances to win in these last, in the first two games. I think that, I don't think it's going to be a blowout necessarily, but I think they'll have my prediction, and I'm not usually right about these things, but my prediction is that it's going to be a difficult game for the Knicks, and I think the Sixers are going to come swinging, for sure. The next game, the nightcap, Nuggets Lakers, also an insane ending. Throughout the game, majority of the game, Lakers had control. They were up by 20 at one point during the third quarter, and it felt, you know, I was like, okay, they're making it into a series. This could be a real statement win. They go back to LA. Maybe you have a fighting chance, right? Against the defending champs that has kicked your ass for the last few years, right? That didn't happen. What happened was the Nuggets came back, all the way back, and Jamal Murray hit a game-winning shot against Anthony Davis. Because I went through that first game, the Sixers-Knicks games, with this disbelief of, like, I can't believe this happened. This time around, I was like, holy shit. I was, like, jumping up and down. I was, like, actually saying, like, holy fuck, you know? Like, I was like, cursing at my TV. With the Nuggets, I kind of expected them to, you know, come back. They're the defending champs for the reason. They're the best team. You know, they're one of the best teams in the league for a reason. And I felt that they were going to make it difficult at the end there. But it's just the way it happened was crazy. And so I was just, and it was also just an incredible back and forth game too. LeBron was playing out of his mind. He had a sequence where he hit two threes in a row, and then he had a steal and then a dunk. And then you go back to the other side and Michael Porter Jr. hits a three. It was just insanity. That was a crazy, I think this game was crazier than the Knicks Sixers game. The Knicks-Sixers game had the more insane sequence, for sure. But this one just like, ramped up toward the end, and then you got this climax at the end with Jamal Murray's game winner, and you're like, oh, I can't believe that happened. That was just, like, this crescendo, and this crazy just build-up, and then you got the payoff at the end. It was, like, it was the perfect setup. It was wild. It was scripted. Not in the sense of whatever, league rig. No, I don't mean in that sense. It just felt like a scripted game, because I was like, could you imagine if the Nuggets went on a game winning buzzer beater shot after 20 down? Like, it's just like it's that kind of game, you know? It's crazy. That was insane. probably incredibly demoralizing for the Lakers. I mean, it's brutal, man. And I'm a certified Lakers hater, you know, as a Warriors fan. But I dude, it's tough, man. I am empathetic in a sense, just how that went down, because this team has been kicking your ass for a good while now. It's been 10 games in a row, right? We talk about how the Pelicans own the Kings this year, winning 6 games against them. Well, just think about that, but just for 2 straight years, right? I sort of relate to that. This is maybe a little different, but I sort of relate to that when the Spurs had Tim Duncan, Manu, Tony Parker, right? That era. When I first really started to watch the Warriors, back in 2009. And the Spurs were just, it was just like, the Spurs have beat the Warriors 20 times in a row, like something like that. Or I think it was, the Warriors hadn't beat San Antonio at home for a ridiculously long amount of time. I don't even know how long it was, like 10 years or something. Maybe it wasn't that long, but it was quite a while. So it was kind of that, where it was just like, when Tim Duncan was there, they just always kick the Warriors' ass. Like, that was just expected, right? And it's kind of, you know, with these teams that I've faced up repeatedly over the last couple of years, it's just one of those things where it's just matchups, man. It's just, this team is just better, right? That's just kind of the truth. They're just better. They have better players. They have the best player. And it's really hard to be able to do much about it. Even with the Lakers having, like, really strong and incredible performances from Davis and LeBron, it just wasn't enough, you know? So, yeah, that was one of the wildest back-to-backs that I've seen. Just you know, continuously watching these games. Well, I took breaks, obviously, and I didn't watch the entirety of both games, but I watched, you know, good chunks of both of them. So that's like a lot of basketball, man. But it was really good, really great stuff. It just felt like a really, just like a perfect night for the NBA and playoffs in general. And yeah, I it's sort of like, okay, we don't want to set our expectations too high. It's not like every night's going to be like this, but you hope that the other series are going to have games like this, because so far, you know, you've had these two games, or you've had these two series between the 2-7 matchups, but the rest of them, it's kind of murky. It's been a lot of blowouts. The only other one that has been close was the Pelicans and the Thunder game, which was good. That was a good game. So yeah, I'm hoping that there's going to be a bit more excitement with the other games that happen throughout the rest of this week. Game 2 is big, man. I mean, every game is big, obviously, but game 2 is big. Because if the road team is able to steal one, that changes it up. All of the home teams have won. No road team has won, period, so far. So yeah, that might change today, tonight. Right now, the Suns and the Timberwolves are playing, and it's going to be Pacers Bucks later, and then at the very end, it's going to be the Mavs and the Clippers. So I feel either the Suns or the Mavs have a bit more of a chance to be able to steal a game. That Pacers game was not great against the Bucks, but maybe they can bounce back, make it more exciting, because they've been favored, man. Since Giannis has been ruled out for the first game and, you know, potentially, you know, other games in the series. A lot of people are giving them kind of, you know, giving them the, you know, essentially saying that they're the favored opponent. And then also the fact, if you look at the regular season, Pacers won 4-1 in the regular season matchup. So that kind of gives, you know, people more confidence in the Pacers to be able to upset the Bucks, and the Bucks have been underperforming. I've talked about that before. So maybe they come through. We'll see. But I have a bit more faith that a team with Luka, a team with like KD and Devin Booker, have more of a chance to get a, you know, game two steal on the road. Just the more experienced teams and players. That's kind of my the catch up. Obviously, there's gonna be more stuff to talk about with, you know, just more. There's games every day, you know. But I wanted to talk about last night because it was crazy. I had to touch upon it. It was a night to remember if you're an NBA fan, for sure. I can't even imagine what it would have been like to be in those arenas when that sequence happened in New York and then the game winner happened in Denver. It's gotta be crazy to be in that type of environment, playoff basketball atmosphere and all that. I've been, during this period, I've been listening to, I've talked about this too, but I've been listening to a lot of just NBA analysis and podcasts and then I feel that now there's this real sense that I truly have a very surface level understanding of the game of basketball, right? I've admitted that before, but as time has progressed, as I listen to more analysis, more discussions between people who really dissect and digest the game, who watch the tape, who recognize certain play calls, is where I'm like, I am truly out of my depth here. This is something that goes so much more beyond what I have previously known. When I played back in the day, when I played recreationally, when I played for school, these are not things that I picked up at all. I was on the Knicks subreddit after the Knicks won. I was just seeing the reactions from people. And there was one post. Essentially, there was someone was in the crowd, and he took a picture of what appeared to be a scout scouting the Knicks for the Pacers. And he has a laptop, and he has a notepad, and he has like an Excel spreadsheet open, and he's essentially jotting down every single play call that's made throughout the game, you know, per play call made, whoever is making that call, bringing up the ball, or whoever is, you know, inbounding the ball, whatever you might call it, or if they're able to hear the coach making the call from the side, they're noting it down. It was crazy. It was when I saw that, I was like, I'm not familiar. What is this? You know, I know pick and roll. I have a, you know, I kind of get like five out a little bit. I understand the concept of zone. I know man-to-man on the defensive end. I know those are the two, right? I mean, that's really the kind of the main defensive positions. But other than that, I just, you know, there's drop coverage and there's hedge. There's so many that I can't even think of because I'm not familiar with them. And so when I saw that spreadsheet and I saw the notes that the scout was jotting down, it was just like, I don't think, you know, I had dreams when I was in middle school of making it to the NBA, like any kind of aspiring, you know, child athlete might think. It's just absurd dreams of being in professional sports, right? And I think that I'm trying to recall the things that I kind of learned when I was practicing at in rec, middle school, high school formats. It's so interesting because, like, I can't even, like, think about, you know, you set screens, you run motion, you do these kinds of very, if you look at it now, are simple plays looking back at it. It's like, I don't know if I even registered or even thought about how much more complex the game is, right? Sure, you can argue that it is ultimately simple in the sense that if you are good enough, you can get the ball into the basket, and if you score more points, you win, right? That's the very base surface level kind of, you know, goal. If you can do the thing, and if you do it well, if you score points, you know, at least on the offensive side of the ball, and on the defensive side, you're able to stop your opponent from scoring points by just not having getting them to score and whatnot, then you win and you're good. But it's so much more than that, and I appreciate now just the level of kind of IQ, but also the level of determination that you would have to get to a point where you're good, that you're so good, where you understand, where you have, you know, the fundamentals down, you're skilled, you can dribble the ball, maybe you have the handles if you're at a guard or wing position. If you're a center, you have the ability to rebound, you have the effort, you are a good deterrent at the rim, right? Those things. But then on top of that, if you want to be great, you have to put in the work to, you know, understand the you know, understand how to defend against certain types of calls, right? How to approach certain types of defenses. Like, these are all things that you have to think about. And it's just like, I'm trying to, because one thing that I kind of remember, this is sort of like a prominent basketball kind of memory or whatever, if you want to call it that, was I was in a rec league during high school, early high school, maybe late middle school, sometime during then. And I was in a rec league with, there were like five or six other teams. It was small that year. And our team went to the rec league championship, which is, you know, It's two teams out of five, basically, so it's not very significant if you kind of think about it. But we had the championship. We won the game. I remember... The thing that I remember the most about that was when we played full court, we applied full court pressure just throughout the entirety of the game. From beginning to end, we did full court pressure. And the other team wasn't prepared for that because they had never, you know, because when you play rec basketball, if you score a point, you run back on defense to the other side of the court, and then you wait for the point guard to come up, and you just kind of stand there and you rest for a bit, right? That was kind of just sort of the typical manner in which it was played. But we were like, why don't we just play full court, right? Because people weren't doing that, and it tired out the opponent. It tired out the opposing team because they had to take more effort into getting the ball forward. Sometimes like, they were caught, you know, sometimes there were like violations because they didn't get to half court in time. And that was like a big reason we won, because we played this defense, this kind of, style of defense that wasn't really being used for some reason. People weren't doing full court because I don't know why. It was just like, we were kids, we had the energy, like we could just run up and down as much as we wanted, right? So yeah, we did that, and it that was kind of a big reason why we won, is because we put out that energy. And so it was just kind of like, but that was like the most extensive, that was the most that I really felt that I thought about, like scheming and stuff, right? Setting picks, setting screens and stuff. Those are things that I knew and I understood, but beyond that, it was just like, you cover your man, you stay in front of them, you contest, right? Don't let them get to the rim, that sort of thing. Very, very basic fundamental stuff. But in terms of like scheming and schematics, and in terms of like just, yeah, making play calls was just not something that was really done. It was just kind of, all right, let's do data, just do whatever, right? All right, do you remember this thing that you did? Or if you have like the best player on your team, they can just outrun your players and get to the basket at will, right? That was just, if you sometimes it was just relying on whoever the best player was and have them just continuously do just layup lines to to the basket, and that was kind of that. If just give the ball to the fastest player, and let them score, and that worked. Sometimes. But other than that, it was just basic. It was just so basic. There was no, they weren't, because it makes sense. It's too much, right? I'm thinking about it and I'm like, dude, how do I even register, or how do I even like consume all of this? You don't, because you're not a professional athlete. That's what you have to do to get to that level. Not only do you have to be athletic and skilled, and you know, maybe you have these sort of tangible talents, but you also have to be you just have to learn about schemes and learn about being a good defender and trying, and then also if you're on the offensive, learning how to maneuver certain types of defenses. It's you know, it's beyond me. So I have steadily grown more of appreciation for the game than I used to in the past, as I've continued to kind of listen to team podcasts just and just in general. when it comes to NBA basketball, because it is just not, it's not something that I even really considered. It was like, you watch these players, and sometimes it's the case where these players are just really good, and they're just able to score. You look at Steph Curry, and I think a reason, a big reason why so many people, kids, whatever, resonate and look up to that is because it's you understand what he does. He shoots the three. That's, you know, and kids want to do that. It scores the most points, and he's really good at doing that. But then it's more, you know, and then, but if you take a closer look, it's not that he's also good at shooting threes. He's good at putting himself in position to get shots, right? I mean, this has been talked to death by, like, you know, actual good analysis or whatever. But if you're looking at it and you're not watching him play, if you're just ball watching, you just see Steph running around. There's like multiple screens set. It's right. It's insanity, and that's not something. When they won their first championship, back in 2015, I didn't look at that. I didn't like think about these kinds of things. I was just like, Steph Curry was the best player of the Warriors because he scored the most points, and in the finals. He didn't get the finals MVP. They gave it to Iguodala because he played the best defense that he could on LeBron James. And those are kind of the two factors. And you know, like there's things that I of course appreciated and I had an understanding of. And I was like, wow, they have a real team now. There's the complimentary player in Klay who's able to kind of do the same thing. But just the offense, the motion offense, it just wasn't something that I even thought about, right? Because when you're a kid, it's just not something. And by that time, I wasn't playing basketball at, you know, the school, high school level or anything like that. So I was sort of out of it a little bit too, in the sense that I just haven't played, so maybe I didn't familiarize myself, or maybe I just forgot about certain things, right? But when they won, it wasn't, I didn't think about, you know, how good the schemes were. I was just like, oh, look how good the players are, which does matter for sure, but it's all of the things. It's the coaching, it's the player's ability to learn and adapt, and it is a team effort. That's just kind of what it comes down to. And I think I still have not fully appreciated those things, but I'm like getting there. I'm starting to recognize certain things that are being done on the court. I don't go full analysis mode or whatever like that, but because that I've listened to a lot of podcasts, I can see what teams are cooking up, basically. And it's cool. I think it's really cool. It's so basketball. Yeah, like I said, it's simple when it really comes down to it in terms of what the absolute goal is in order to win a game. But to get to that point, there's so much that goes on that I think casual viewers like myself, even though I've been watching the game for a very long time now, haven't had the chance to fully grasp that, because you just don't think about these things. I didn't really think about these things really too much, but you know, over the years, it's become a lot more clear to me how you create good, you know, good offense, good defense. There's a lot that goes to it. There's a reason why there's so many coaches on the staff. You know what I mean? There's a reason why there's so many people as a part of the staff. Because the head coach can't do everything, right? And the players can't do everything. So you need all of that. You need all the pieces in order to have a great team. Yeah, so that's kind of what what I've been thinking about as the playoffs have started and then have kind of continued to go. Just have a more of an appreciation for the game. And I think it's cool. It's really cool. It's made me honestly really love the game more than I already have. And I'm excited to see where the rest of the playoffs go. I'm excited to see some good basketball, some more good basketball. Anyways, I'll leave it off at that for today. Again, I'll try to figure out, you know, what I want to talk about. I might just like touch upon some games that happen throughout the week, just because there's so many games. there's games every day. So maybe something similar to this, where I touch upon the more exciting ones and, you know, the more exciting matchups or whatever. I'm probably going to do that by the end of this week or this weekend, just whenever I feel. So yeah, I will catch up then. All right, it is April 26th. Recording this on a Friday evening, late evening. Obviously, as it is probably not surprising at all to hear, a little basketball catch-up is in order. I was thinking of recording maybe tomorrow, but I you know, it's a lot of games, man. It's a lot of games to wrap up, so I wanna like try to condense and provide my thoughts for when I have when I've retained memory of the games that I've seen most recently. You know, like trying to wrap up a whole weekend of games is a little difficult. I could do that. I have done that, but it's a good problem to have. The fact that there's so much basketball going on is a great problem to have to struggle to be like, man, which game and which series do I want to talk about? But yeah, I wanted to just hop on and catch up on some games, or catch up on some games and series, since we're sort of at, I would argue, the halfway point for many of these first round matchups. And some of these games are going to kind of go into sort of pivotal games. There's a couple more game threes that are happening later tonight. I just finished watching. It started super early. Started at like 2:30 p.m. over here, 5:30 Eastern time. I finished watching the Pacers and the Bucks play. Really crazy ending to that game. It almost went into double overtime, but it went into overtime. Chris Middleton was crazy. He was hitting these insane clutch shots, kind of in lieu of Lillard, who was playing kind of semi-injured. He clearly was, towards the end of the game, he clearly was not trying to be super involved in the offense, right? But yeah, his performance was crazy. The Pacers ended up pulling through, sort of like a, you could argue maybe like a game-winning shot by Haliburton at the end there. Main thing, really, main takeaway, I mean, the big one being Middleton's shots and his shot making. He had 42 points, I believe. But I guess other than that, the main thing is just the rebounding Oh, the rebounding was awful by Milwaukee. Like, it just didn't seem like there was any effort to box out. Like, it was so evident, it was so obvious. Like, it was just like, I was like, dude, I didn't have, you know, any skin in this game necessarily, but I can just only imagine what a Bucks fan was feeling watching just like these rebounds. Just like, it was like four or five possessions in a row where Indiana were able to get the offensive rebound, and you have to admire their hustle to in being able to do that. But a lot of it was just lazy, just not committing to boxing out your man, and just like some of the rebounds were, you know, they were kind of like the long rebounds because they bounced off the rim and, you know, came out past the perimeter. But like a lot of them were just like down by the rim, and it was just like, dude, you have like two, you got Brooke Lopez and you got Bobby Portis, like you got taller dudes, and it was like Andrew Nembhard was like out hustling all of them. Like that's the type of thing that wins you games, as we saw in the Knicks and Sixers game two, where it was the second and third attempts to, you know, essentially grab possession of the ball, that's what kind of resulted in the Knicks winning their game. And I would argue that was a huge reason why Indiana was able to pull it off, right? It was the effort. They were not making any shots late towards the game, but they were able to hold on to multiple possessions, and I think that was huge. It was massive. That was like the game changer. There was a stat they were showing on the box score. It was 30 offensive, or it was like 30 points, 30 second chance points versus 15. That's the game. That's the game right there, man. That's pretty much sums it up. It was a close game. Bucks were in it because Middleton was incredible, but it was mostly due to just the fact that Indiana was continuing to get second chances. It was second, third, fourth chances, and that kind of secured it for them, right? We got ourselves a series. I did, you know, I did talk about how I had my doubts after game one, but clearly they've shown that they're not a good matchup. I mean, in the sense that they're a very tough matchup for Milwaukee. Indiana is, and they've shown that in the last couple of games, where they had in game two, it was essentially kind of a blowout, from the Pacers. And then you had this game, which kind of came down to the wire. But again, it was the younger, the more athletic team that kind of pulled it off at the end there. But I mean, just it was an incredible game. It was great. I'm happy that I was able to kind of catch the sort of majority of the second half of it, kind of after work. So that was fun. Right now, the Clippers and the Mavs are playing. Again, like I've mentioned before, I'll still watch for sure, but it's just not the series that I'm most interested in. I've just, you know, like I've mentioned, I've seen the matchup before, and I'm like, all right, let's move on to a different one. The Timberwolves and the Suns are playing tonight. That one I'm a little bit more interested in. Timberwolves are currently up 2-0. And they both victories by them were pretty decisive. So much so that a lot of analysts, a lot of commentary people are sort of saying that this could spell the end for the Suns and everything like that. It's I think after two games for every series, I just feel that it's way too soon to determine whether a series is quote-unquote over. You know what I mean? There have been instances... I mean, there's been many, many instances where teams have come back from a 2-0 deficit. And it just... Especially in the case where the team that is up 2-0 has the home court advantage. It just sort of... Like, it's sort of like you're supposed to do... You're supposed to do that when you're... You know, when you have home court, right? The expectation is that you're gonna win at home every time, and then game. It's like that. You know, that the sort of the, I guess the ethos or understanding, or reasoning for, like, you know, having home court advantage, from a, like, a team perspective, is like, if the series gets to a point of game seven, you are in an advantage, right? So it's like if both teams just protect their home court, then it's just kind of like the higher seed does has the advantage in that sense, right? Does that kind of make sense? So series that are in a position of 2-0 is, like, expected, I feel, right? And it, that makes sense. So it's really it happens all the time, and it is what it is. Like, there has to be some sort of storyline on a daily basis, in regards to these matchups, these series, whatever. So you have to be like, is the series over? It's like, no. Anytime there is a 2-0 deficit, the series is not over yet. If it's 3-0, then it is pretty much over. As is the case for the Lakers and Nuggets series. I have watched all three of the games, and every single time it plays out in the exact same manner, just like a few tweaks here and there. It's like a serialized TV show, or like a cartoon TV show, where there's, like, a, you know, the plot's incredibly generic. Like Saturday, you know, Saturday morning cartoons or whatever. It's very predictable. It's like, oh, maybe there's, you know, maybe this time the bad guy is gonna win. I'm not saying that the Lakers are the bad guy, you know what I mean? But I'm just in this example, like, you know, you expect the Lakers, you know, the Lakers are gonna be like, oh, they have the, you know, they have the lead. What are they going to do? What are the Power Rangers going to do? I never watch Power Rangers, but I'm just guessing what happens. Or there's, like, a problem that's set up at the very beginning, which in this case is, like, the first quarter or the first half. And then the heroes or whatever, the protagonists of the story, the Nuggets, they're just like, okay, what are we going to do this time around, guys? Are we going to come back and win? And then they come back and win. That has happened every single game for all three games, this series. And this pretty much happened, like, last year too. It was like it was a close sweep as it was deemed by a lot of people. And I mean, this has been sort of like a close sweep too. Game three was more of a, you know, Nuggets had more of a control over the final few minutes of the game. They had a double digit lead, and they just sort of were just playing around with them. They were kind of letting the Lakers get back into it, but it just didn't matter. It was like a 5-point game, 15 seconds to go. It didn't matter. So it's almost like mind numbing, as, like, again, I'm a certified and, like, self-proclaimed Lakers hater. Easy to say that as a Warriors fan, but I'm like watching this. I'm like, this is honestly kind of torturous in a sense. It's very cliche to say this because it's been used to death, but it is kind of the definition of insanity, of just doing the same thing over and over again and expecting the same results. Just, it, nothing changed. Like, there were after 11 games, there were no adjustments. Nobody stepped up. No other players could do anything at all. Like, I get it. Game 2 came down to the wire. That was just a kind of a very, you know, a very evident choke by the Lakers. But still, it was set up in almost the same exact way as the other games that have happened between these two teams in the postseason. So it just is like, it's like clockwork. It's like fascinating, but also, like, I'm just like, it's like mind-boggling, just the fact that the Lakers, for the life of them, cannot seem to find a way to adjust and beat this team, right? It is the case where the Nuggets are that good, but it's just like, you blow your gas too early, you know, at the very beginning of the game. This has happened at every single game where Lakers have like a double digit lead in the first half and then they blow it. It's like, it's incredible. It might happen with game 4. I don't know, like, if they're going to just give up and lie down because the series is already over pretty much, right? It's like, once the 3-0 is over, that's like the exception to, you know, all the other deficits that are out there. 2-0, it's not over for sure. 3-0, it's over. You know, we saw the Celtics come back from that deficit last year against the Heat, but they didn't pull it off. They could have been the first team to come back, but no, they blew it. So, when you see that, it's like, it's very hard to imagine a team breaking that curse, and it's definitely not going to happen with this Lakers team. So it's either going to be a gentleman's sweep or just a full-on sweep. Like, who knows if the Lakers even really want to try next game, because the season's over. It just is. They're just kind of delaying the inevitable, even if they do win. So, you know, what's the mentality? Do they want to just kind of roll over and die, or do they want to give it one last shot and try to win at least one game? Other series. A lot of other series are currently 2-1. Like I said, there's, you know, the only other series that potentially could go 3-0 is the Timberwolves and Suns game, or Suns series. That's game 3 is going to happen later tonight, like I mentioned. But all the other series are 2-1. Which is good. Makes it more entertaining. Extends the playoffs, more games, more entertainment for myself, right? Who has no horse in this race. So I'm not complaining by any means. Some other things that I want to touch on. I really don't want to get into the Knicks and Sixers game because there's just been way too much discourse regarding Embiid and his dirty play and everything like that. It was bad. I watched the first half-ish of that game, and then I kind of tuned in sort of towards the end of the game when it was already kind of over. Sixers had the game. It was bad, man. It was just really, like, that's... We've gone, as a Warriors fan, we've gone through the paces with Draymond and what he's done in the playoffs, and I think, look, the things he pulls and the repercussions that he has faced are justified. I feel that what Embiid did was almost, it is kind of beyond the level of what Draymond did, and the fact it wasn't just him pulling down Mitchell Robinson's legs while he went up and then pushed him away. It was all the other antics he had. Like, he was just playing, like, with just no regard for anything. It was just, it was careless. It was just ugly basketball from what I saw from him. Like, he just was like, I'm going to do whatever it is to win, even if it means breaking people's legs. That's not what happened, but it could have happened. You know what I mean? It's not good, man. That's not good basketball. I don't like that. And then the fact that the officiating kind of rewarded that type of play to the point where he had like 50 points and the Sixers had the win and all of that. It's not good, man. It's not a good look. So, yeah, that's all I have to say. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunately going to get ugly from this point on just because of that. You're going to have, it's going to get testy between Philly fans and New York fans. So now you got it, man. Now you got a little rivalry thing going on. It's unfortunately on the back of an incredibly talented player who pulled off some nonsense. I don't like to see that kind of thing. It's not fun. Like, especially just considering the fact that someone, Robinson, could have been seriously injured, and he did get injured. He had to step out of the game, and he didn't come back. And while it wasn't the most serious injury, like, it wasn't like, you know, I don't know. Like I said, it wasn't like Embiid broke his legs or anything like that, but it could have like led to something far more serious and significant. I don't know, man. It's shit play, man. Shit play. It sucks seeing that, because Embiid is an incredible player, but that type of thing, and then his attitude and all of these things, it makes me hard to like appreciate his play when he acts up like that. Moving on. Cavs Magic Game 3 yesterday was a massive blowout for the Magic, which I was happy to see, man. I was happy that Orlando is one of the teams that I'm kind of rooting for right now in you know, just overall, because I like kind of the underdog team. I like, you know, just sort of this up and coming sort of, you know, young team. That's cool. And I really like just the effort they put on the defensive side. I think Banchero is an incredible player. He's only 21. Crazy, right? And I also, look, the whole thing with Cleveland, maybe I overblew it a little bit in regards to them matchup hunting or you know, rather, you know, matchup dodging in their case of, you know, trying not to face up against either Miami or most likely Philadelphia, right? And so I've kind of given them shit for that. But I want to see, it's good to see Orlando, you know, despite the two first ugly couple of games, they were able to come through. And I mean, it must have been just awesome for the fans to be in attendance after such a long time of them not being in the playoffs at all. I think that's great. It's great to see. There's some really fun plays. Jalen Suggs had like a windmill dunk in transition. What else? Banchero was hitting just like fadeaways. he was incredible to watch. I didn't watch the whole thing. I kind of, like, once they were like up 30 something in the third quarter, I was like, all right, I think I got the gist of it. I don't expect the Cleveland to come back. It's like maybe Mitchell starts heating up, but I don't really see it. He was having a poor game anyway. I mean, the Cavs in general were just not good. They only scored 84 points. 86 points. Just not a good performance by them. So we got a series now. Game 4 is going to be huge. Every series now where it's 2-1, Game 4 is going to be massive. And that's exciting. And we got a couple of those, or a few of those, this weekend. Tomorrow... Let me look at the schedule. Actually, never mind. I'll look at it later. Tomorrow we got like 4 games. And I got 3 more games on Sunday. So quite a lot. So I think for the weekend wrap-up, I think I might do... I might just like talk about that on Monday instead. Just pick out some games and, you know, some of the series that I want to catch up on. But yeah, that's kind of the quick wrap-up for a few of the games that happened, or, you know, some of the series that have happened in the last couple of days. It's kind of funny. We're sort of in this period right now, and who knows, by the time I post this, I'll try to post this by tonight, just so it's kind of relevant to what I'm talking about. Right now there's this whole... I haven't really listened to a ton of music recently. I haven't listened to a lot of music. I haven't listened to rap music. There's been some albums that have come out, but I just haven't really... There hasn't really been something that's elicited my interest, you know? But there's... It's honestly probably old now, but Kendrick Lamar and Drake had sort of like diss tracks, or rather Kendrick had a diss line. he had a diss in a song where he was featured with Future and Metro Boomin. I didn't listen to that for a very long time, until kind of recently, and I got caught up on that. Drake put out a diss track. I listened to it sometime this week. It was like Rick Ross put out a diss track a little while back. But now Drake pulled back his diss track because for some reason he decided to use an AI-generated or AI-manipulated voice of Tupac along with the diss track. And now the Tupac estate is suing him, so he pulled that back. This is all to say, as I was kind of listening to these songs and these like lines and stuff, I realized that I'm kind of over diss tracks a little bit. I think I'm just over them. I feel that I've heard all of these kinds of lines before. You know, you got some out-of-pocket lines. You're like, oh, wow, he really said that? And, you know, some very offensive lines about the particular person that you're dissing. Or kind of the more typical ones where it's, like, braggadocious. In Drake's case, it was like, I gave you your first number one, all that. And it's like, okay, but what's that, you know? That's cool. What are we arguing here, you know? We're arguing about... It was like Kendrick's line, the big one, was like... You know, fuck the big three, it's just big me. And then that started a whole conversation. Because it was sort of assuming that... The three were like him, J. Cole, and Drake. Or whatever. And so that... You know, maybe I didn't... I was, like, trying to listen to the lyrics on the Like That song. I sound so out of touch right now. it sounds like I'm like, discovering rap music for the first time. I listened to the song. I was trying to listen to some of the lines. I'm like, there's maybe some subliminal messaging, but I'm like, I just... Maybe I'm just not catching up on it. Maybe I need to, like, watch a video detailing the beef between Kendrick and Drake or whatever, because I really didn't know if there was anything in there other than that specific line where he was directly addressing Drake, and I was like, okay, I don't know, maybe I'm just not catching on. And then I just sort of, again, I listened to Drake's song, his diss track to Kendrick. It was like a catchy song. It was like fun. But then I kind of came to the realization again. I was just like, I'm just sort of over all of this stuff because it just doesn't matter. It's, you could argue that there is some competitive spirit that is sort of maybe invigorated, in which these incredibly wealthy, you know, talented individuals come forth and put a stamp on their name and say that they're the best in the game and all that stuff. And that's, you could argue that's fun. But when it goes into the personal details and it's all petty. It's just petty nonsense. And I'm just like, okay, all right, for sure. I can see where you're coming from. Listen, you needed me on your record. Like, I don't care. I don't care, man. It's just not interesting, you know? It's not very interesting to me anymore. I don't care about whatever beef is between these people, whether you got slighted on a record or you didn't get royalties or something like that. It's not interesting because there's like no stakes. There's no stakes. And it, again, it just comes from a place of these, of personal pettiness and just, it's, you hurt my feelings. And then I'm gonna write a song telling you that you hurt my feelings, but also telling you that you're not shit. And then I'm gonna put it over a beat. Am I out of touch now? Like, I understand, look, I understand the historical significance of battle rapping, of like, you know, rhyming, and I understand the history of it. I just think it's where we are now with diss tracks and everything. It's to a point where it's between two individuals where there is nothing for either of them to like lose or whatever. Sure, maybe it's like their, you know, their personal image is like damaged, or you know, their brand or whatever is like damaged. I don't know. It's sort of a, maybe it's an out, like an outing. You could argue with like the Pusha T track, Story of Adidon, on Drake, that there was a lot of slights and a lot of things that Drake or Pusha T called out against Drake, but ultimately it's kind of like, if you just step back and you're just kind of like, you think about it for a little bit, you're like, why should we care? It's entertainment, right? Maybe this is what it is. It's akin to reality television, in the sense where it's just, you know, you just have this drama, this personal drama, but it's with the backdrop of, you know, maybe catchy lyrics or whatever. I just think that the personalities involved with these sort of spats between people ultimately, it's just not interesting to me anymore. And I'm just kind of like, okay, so he said these things, and it's so what? What's the result of these, you know, these findings? It's just like, you know, I don't know, Rick Ross said something about Drake getting plastic surgery for his muscles, and I'm like, okay, so we're just, you know, I guess we're kind of talking about, you know, pointing to his insecurities and or whatever. I just like, what is the end goal, right? Is it just to say some shit, to put some stuff out there? I don't know. I mean, I get it. I understand. And it is, you know, you could argue that it's like entertaining to a lot of people because a lot of people are talking about it. But I'm just like, just big picture, it's just like, why, like, maybe I don't want to feel like I'm old. I'm not old. We're out of touch or whatever, but it's like, what are we talking about? Like, what, when we discuss these, like, diss tracks or whatever, it's like, what are we actually talking about? You know what I mean? So that's just kind of my feelings about it, I guess, is just that I don't have to engage at all. I'm not saying that, like, you know, if people enjoy it, people enjoy it. People enjoy seeing these kinds of back and forths, and that's fun. And at a certain time, I also enjoyed it quite a bit. But this isn't me saying that you shouldn't enjoy diss tracks, because I think, for the most part, I think that they're unnecessary and kind of silly to begin with. But it's just personally, I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay. It's things that we've heard before. It's like, oh, there's like Drake actually has a kid, and I mean, like, okay. And then what? And then what? I don't know. I don't know, maybe someone can further educate me. Again, like I mentioned before, I understand the building blocks of rap, and, you know, how you could argue, just like, you know, battle rap is still a thing, where you showcase your talents and all that. I think between these kinds of people, I just don't care, because it's just so beyond what really matters. I don't know. it just seems inconsequential. That's it. I've had my peace with it. Maybe a really good diss track will bring me back into it. You know, what do I mean by that? I feel that if a rapper, I don't know, this is like, what would a really good diss track be? You defrauded your employees. Like, it's always like these little petty, it's always like personal details. It's like, you had a kid with a porn star, you da 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 da, ghostwriter, which, like, to be fair, I think that's, you know, I'm not defending Drake by any means. You know, I don't really like Drake at all, honestly. I don't like his music. I don't really care for him as a person. But I'm just, like, trying to, like, you know, consider it from a big picture standpoint. It's like, if you call him out for being a shitty person, it's like, okay, but that's just who he is. He's just gonna double down. Right? It's like, how is that gonna affect him? Like, people already know that he's at a position where he is because of everything, right? It's the, you know, his fans don't care if he messaged an underage Millie Bobby Brown, right? They don't care. They've already moved past it. Like, you can call him out for it, but it's just like, what is it really gonna do? Like, you could diss him for that, maybe. But it just doesn't, that's not what rappers care about, really. Maybe they do, I don't know. It's just maybe not as interesting to kind of rap circles in general. Anyways, This is kind of what I was thinking about as I've listened to this. Might this you know, listening back to this is probably going to be interesting, because like I'm thinking like years down the line, because who knows, maybe I'll get back into that kind of rap music. I don't know, it's just kind of funny thinking about it. It's just like, oh, he really said that? It's just like, yeah, I mean, he said that, but like, what does he mean? It's like, okay,
you a little bitch, and you da 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 da.
It's like, okay. I don't know, it's funny, it's funny like thinking about it, like, because I remember when I was a kid, I was talking about a kid, meaning like when I was like 14, 15. You know, I've discussed this before, where I've said like, you know, I've talked about how, you know, rap music isn't what it was like it used to be, you know, when I started listening to Tribe Called Quest and, you know, that, you know, 90s hip hop, and, you know, I was like Nicki Minaj and Lil Wayne, like that kind of that era of music, and I was like constantly comparing it. I kind of feel that a little bit, not in the sense, because there's still really good rap out there, but in the sense of like some like contemporary hip hop is, it's like, you know, you could argue it's like fun and stuff, but it's pop music, right? I mean, it's been that way for a long time now, but a lot of rap is still pop. And I know that recently rap has not been very popular, because we kind of have already run the gambit with what trap and what drill sounds like. I think the public and just, you know, general music audiences have grown a little tired of listening to that kind of rap, which is why a lot of things, like, I don't really listen to the radio, I don't listen to Top 100 or anything like that, but there's a reason why genres like country or alternative, or, you know, kind of this more, some other, you know, just other types of music have started to, you know, you got like Olivia Rodrigo you know, country artists like, I don't know, I can't really name any. Morgan Wallen, is he still popular? You know, you got them kind of being more prominent, as opposed to rap artists, who have kind of dominated during like the 2010s, right? But there's a shift now. There's like more, like, people maybe are a bit more sensitive. I don't know, maybe the general public is more sensitive to the kind of music that they're listening to, where certain kinds of because I feel that with country, there's a certain vibe to them. And it's not necessarily even pop country. I think just country in general has started to really, or has been more popular recently, just because maybe there's kind of a shift where people kind of care a bit more. Maybe they care more about just certain types of, you know, emotions. Maybe they want something a bit more like actually relatable, as opposed to a lot of rap music, where it does kind of, you know, accentuate a lot of things, including like violence and all that. I won't get into that. That's a whole nother conversation to begin with. But yeah, I think maybe there's just kind of been this shift, and for more potentially thoughtful music. And I think it's really interesting. Again, I'm not at all up to date with what's popular at all. I don't even know, like, what, you know, there's like Taylor Swift came out with a new album, but it's like, other than that, I have no idea I don't know what's popping, right? I have no idea. I think that with things with, you know, Spotify and all these other streaming services, where you are able to curate your own personal playlists and the things you want to listen to, it sort of has, we've kind of moved past this field of Billboard Top 100, right? Of course, it still very much exists. Popular music exists. But I think that, like my own individual tastes are so different from like a general audience, I feel, right? And even the general audience, I'm not even trying to say that people who, I'm not trying to do like, oh, I listen to, you know, you listen to my, no. I'm just trying to say like people who, just like the general audience who the typical person. The typical person doesn't really even exist anymore. They have their own tastes of music and stuff that they have curated things that they listen to. So it's I think it's a lot more difficult to try to capture, I don't know, to be someone who is in a position where you are like a Taylor Swift. Like she's like the only, it's like her, Beyonce, like they're like the only, I mean Drake, you know, these mega pop stars, they're like the only ones who have any chance to, you know, kind of continue to be successful as like popular artists. I know this is very, I don't really necessarily believe that, but in terms of just like image and recognizability, you have to kind of go beyond being just interesting. I don't know. Maybe that's kind of nonsensical, but there, you know, I haven't really listened to music that much in general, just because I just haven't. I've been listening to other stuff. I've been consumed with basketball. Really, that's my excuse. So just like thinking about music, even this week when I was catching up on the whole Kendrick and Drake beef shit, I was just sort of, you know, along with thinking about how I no longer, you know, enjoy that type of style of rap music, that kind of genre of rap music with diss tracks, I've also kind of like I've noticed that there is this, it feels that there's this very, very prominent shift where popular music is not, it's not quite the same as it used to be in terms of just like how music in general gets popular, right? There's far more of a discussion that goes into that, but it's just interesting to think about considering how we all have the ability to curate our own playlists and everything like that. So where our tastes and preferences go very, very, you know, can vary significantly from person to person. So I don't know, it's just very interesting to think about how much of kind of music has shifted over the years. Anyways, I know I went on a kind of a long tangent there, but it's something that I've been kind of thinking about, along with thinking about basketball 24/7. So, yeah, quick catch up, for what happened. I will try to do, I'll probably shoot to do kind of a review of sorts, or not review, but a recap of the weekend's games on Monday, because I think that makes the most sense, and I'm excited for more basketball. I also have kind of a big week coming up in terms of planning for my trip, so beyond that, I don't know how much time I'll be able to put into recording, so next week might be a shorter episode. Anyways, that's going to do for this week. Thank you for listening. This has been Save the Semantics, signing off.